Chicago sports conversation is now.
This year we got some new guys, and when I say new guys, we still get some returning new guys. So it's exciting, looking forward and looking ahead, and the challenges are going to be greater.
The Beat.
I know, coming here and seeing the fans and putting on the jersey, all that. So that really makes it sink in, and it's very exciting.
On 720 WGN.
Yes, yes, yes. One of our favorite shows of the year to do. That's right, live at the Continental Ballroom at the Chicago Hilton, 720 South Michigan Avenue. Come on out. We have 3 hours of Chicago Blackhawks radio coming right at you in the dead of summer. Let's get a little vote by an applause here. Who's happy that Troy Murray's going to be with us for the whole show? There you go. Look at that, Troy. They love you. They just love you. Isn't that beautiful?
Or there's an applause sign somewhere, isn't there?
No. There's no. We do everything on the reel. Harry Tynowitz, do you know how to? Are you all right down there? You look confused. Can you? You might have to turn
I
on
think
that.
He's got an original Dennis Savard jersey.
What
on.
Do you think about that?
No more confused than normal. Troy, it's great to see you. If I had a Troy Murray jersey, I'd be wearing that. But yeah, this is 82-83 season. And
those were the actual jerseys. That's a real jersey.
Oh yes, sir. I've got.
Like, you guys may laugh, but this actually was the jerseys that we wore back in the day. The material, it's heavy, it's thick.
Give it up for Harry. Look at him.
Yes,
Harry Tynowitz, an original.
I've got the fighting strap, which I don't think Savvy ever used more than once.
I tell you what, Savvy was a little bit of a surprise. He was a tough little guy, and he was a lefty.
He was a southpaw.
He's a lefty.
Southpaw.
Savvy's actually going to be here at 5:10. Let me give you the lineup. Connor Murphy in about 5 minutes. Patrick Sharp will be here at 4:35. John Hayden, Richard Panik, Thomas Yurko. Tony Esposito will be here at 6:35. And Troy with us the whole show. Let's also do a little judging by the fans' reaction. Who thinks that the playoffs last year were a complete fluke? I was expecting a lot of cheers there. People are a little worried here, Troy. What's up with that? What do you think as we get into summer and moving along here?
Well, I think they misunderstood.
They misunderstood the question?
The question.
I'm saying that it will.
It happens a lot when Carm asks them.
The question is, who thinks that last year in the playoffs will never happen again? Let's do it that way. All right. My bad.
We also saw, as the playoffs went on, how good the Nashville Predators are. And the Hawks are in a division now where you have not only a talented Nashville team, but a talented Minnesota Wild team. Yet in the regular season, the Hawks dominated. So we just have to find a way for the Hawks to get that domination from the season into the playoffs.
Well, I think that, I got to give Nashville a ton of credit. Boy, they played well, and as you said, they went on a great run, and they were that close to winning the Stanley Cup. And there was a lot of belief. There was a lot of purpose in their games. And I think for the Blackhawks, it happened so quick that they just didn't have that opportunity to turn things around and figure out what was going on before it was over. I mean, there's no way in the world after losing the first two games that you didn't think this team, because of the experience, was going to win, one of the games, maybe two of the games in Nashville, because they were going to pick it up. But all of a sudden, within a week, you're out, and everybody's going like, what happened? So, a lot of the moves kind of were precipitated because of what happened in the playoffs last year. You can understand they lose last year to St. Louis. It's a hard-fought series.
Yep.
Brent Seabrook hits the post with 5 minutes to go or 2 minutes to go, double post. It doesn't go in. Maybe you get that game into overtime. Maybe you win it, and you move on. But, this year, it was kind of a, we can't have this happen again, and you're out in the first round in 2 years. So that's why they there was some necessity to make some of the moves that they did. And for Stan Bowman, for the entire organization, those are tough decisions that they have to make. Everybody was shocked when the Panarin trade was done. Love having Brandon Saad back, and obviously people are excited to have him, and he's younger than Panarin. Patrick Sharp, we never wanted him to leave. He's back, which is good, and he had some surgery, but he's healthy and ready to go. We can talk about that when he comes on set. And then Connor Murphy, we're going to have him up here next. He's a great young player. He's 6 years younger than Hjalmarsson, 5 years on his deal, and I'll tell you what, he's the real deal. He's a good defenseman, and just maybe because he was in Arizona, he's not quite a household name. But you guys all like what he's done here. Love Nicklas Hjalmarsson. Sad to see him go. But when you lose first round 2 years in a row, there has to be some changes made.
A couple of fan favorites back in Sharp and Saad. But losing Marian Hossa is just such a tough blow that nobody saw coming. And, you know, kudos to the Hawks for keeping it under their vest. I always just thought it was like a veteran's day off when he wouldn't practice. I'm just shocked to see Marian Hossa go. Who do you think is going to be on that first line, Troy, with Taves and Saad? Do you think it's Panic's job?
Is that the first line, or is Panic's line the first line?
It depends. You know,
I'm just kidding.
It starts with the captain. Yeah. To me, it always starts with 19. 19 is always the most important guy on the Hawks.
It's been interesting to see the left wing side with Jonathan Taves. Richard Panic has come in here and had played extremely well. And I think that you've got a real nice fit there with Jonathan Taves. They were looking for that left side position, and it was Nick Smaltz at one point. Ryan Hartman was playing up there. They tried all different guys in that position. I think that the Blackhawks thought going into the season is Saad is going to play left wing with Taves and Richard Panic, Patrick Sharp along with Anisimov and Patrick Kane. And then you've got the opportunity. There's a lot of other options. I really like the fact that Tommy Wingles and Lance Boma were brought on board. I think one of the things that you looked at in the series against Nashville was there was no pushback in some areas that they were looking for, and I think they had to change kind of the makeup of how this team is structured a little bit and be a little bit tougher to play against and have those type of players that are going to make it miserable on the opponents. And you get that. Tanner Caro had a great season last year. I think he's ready for the next step. Nick Smaltz is a natural center, was playing wing and center. You know, he's probably going to have an opportunity. Ryan Hartman had a fantastic season last year. John Hayden, the big kid, he's going to have an opportunity. Two of the younger players that we had, Anthony Lewis and Alex DeBrincat, are certainly going to have the opportunity. And I'll tell you what, you always pencil in a starting lineup in your mind and within your organization, but there's always one player. There's always somebody that makes it out of training camp that you just didn't see coming.
Let's just remind everybody, 109 points, first in the conference. Last year in the playoffs happened, but it's not going to happen again, and we're moving it forward. Connor Murphy's going to be on board with us in about 3 minutes here. At the bottom of the hour, Patrick Sharp, Dennis Savard at 5 o'clock. We're broadcasting live from the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago, brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland. He's Harry Tynan. It's Troy Murray. I'm Mark Carmen. This is 720 WGN. All right, 720 WGN, our live broadcast from the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention, brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland. Connor Murphy, welcome to the 10th annual Blackhawks Convention. Welcome to Chicago, and welcome to the greatest hockey city in America, out of Arizona. It's got to feel different, no disrespect to the Coyotes, but this is a whole other atmosphere, a whole other level right now.
It is, yeah. When you have that history and with the success that the team's had over the last years, it's something special, and it's got a perfect recipe of everything, a mixture of great fans and great players and staff, and when that comes together, it makes it a really good experience for everyone to be a part of.
I know that you've talked about this before, but you get the phone call. Where were you when you got the phone call? How surprised were you? Had you heard rumors about the possibility that you were going to be moved, or was this a complete shock when you got that call?
Yeah, it was a shock. I was just sitting at home having lunch, eating some salmon, and
good choice.
Yeah, it was good. And but then they just said, he called, and I thought he was just going to have a casual conversation, and he just said he got traded to the Blackhawks, and I kind of just asked him, "What is that? What do I do? Like, do I?"
I've never done this before.
Yeah, I said, because he said, "Any questions?" I said, "Yeah, like, what do I do? Do I?" He's like, "Oh, I'm sure they'll call you." So Stan called me right away, and it was right away. It was just really exciting. I've gotten to know Stan a little bit through World Championships, being on the U.S. team, and to show that he wanted me was really big, and to step into such a great organization with so many great core players, and to be able to try to follow and join in and bring what I can to help. It'll be exciting, and I'm really looking forward to kind of stepping in.
When you find out that you're traded, that's obviously a big shock and a surprise. Then you find out it's for Nicklas Hjalmarsson, who was a guy who was here, a big part of this core group of guys, three-time Stanley Cup champion. What goes through your mind when you find out who you were traded for?
Yeah, I think, I mean, everyone says it's a lot of times with deals that you can't really compare and say, compare exactly player for player, because some guys bring a little bit different things, but it's natural for you to your mind to go right there. And I've watched the Hawks a lot, and I like to study some D-men that are top around the league, Duncan Keith being one, and Jalmerson was a guy that he's so good at using his feet and defending and taking away space, and he's a really smart player and a fearless guy, a shot blocker. So that's something that it definitely actually makes you almost feel good that you know that it is a good player that it's involved, but it's selfishly you're happy to be going to such a great spot, and you obviously know that there's a lot of other factors going into the business side of it, but when it happens, you kind of just go with it. And I think as long as you're worrying about how you're playing, it doesn't matter comparisons or anything.
So for our fans out there and for our listeners, how would you describe your game? You just kind of talked about Nicholas Jalmerson, what he has meant and how he played. What is your style that you're going to bring?
Yeah, no, I'm more of a defensive guy. I've worked a lot more recently on skating. I've become pretty good being mobile and a good skater for my size. And I bring a physical aspect and being competitive and definitely getting the juices flowing and throwing the body around a little bit. And that's something that I like to do and know that if I got the size, might as well use it a bit. And my goal has been to try to stay as a consistent top four defenseman that can play good minutes. And I want to be able to come in and prove that I can do that right away here. And there's a few unreal defensemen already here. And to have the chance possibly to play with one of those guys will be awesome. And I just really want to make sure I'm pulling my part to earn a role.
Hey, Connor, let's talk about your physical presence. The morning of the trade, I go looking for a picture of you. There's one where you got your shirt off.
Yeah.
Then I find another picture, you got your shirt off again. There's like 17 pictures of you, and none of them are you wearing a jersey. Yeah. How much time are you spending in the gym?
I just love mirrors. Just love. I've been getting a lot of. I'll get like on Instagram, like I'll get like tagged in a picture of a kid with his shirt off flexing and like in front of a mirror, and I'm like, what is this? And then I find out that it's this bodybuilder, and his name's Connor Murphy, and like
for all you ladies out there, Google Connor Murphy right now, and it's going to give you a picture.
Yeah,
and it's a bodybuilder.
Yeah, so I don't. Yeah, So anyway, it's funny. I get tagged in a lot of that stuff, and at one point he got kind of mad, I think, because he was commenting on my Instagram picture saying, "This is a fake account. This is not me." And I'm like, we have the same name. I mean, I think.
All right, so, as Troy mentioned, there are some studs on the blue line on this team.
Yeah.
You're a right-handed stick. Have you thought about playing with a guy with multiple Stanley Cups, multiple Norris trophies, multiple gold medals? Duncan Keith and you back there on the blue line.
That possibility is motivation in itself. It's big, but I mean, you always think of the way, and the coaches make it pretty clear going into any training camp that you have to earn every role or any pairing you're going to be involved in. So I just really want to focus on playing hard and letting that take care of itself. But with that possibility alone is enough motivation to try to play your best and get there.
Are you intimidated at all by Coach Q? Because, he's Coach Q and all, and he's kind of a serious fellow every now and then.
Yeah, we had a pretty serious coach in Tippett in Arizona, and my dad's a coach and been got a lot of advice my whole life, so I like coaching, and I know that even if it is hard at times, it's for the better. They're trying to get the best out of you, so I'm excited, and these guys have had a really good track record, and the coaches have had a lot of great players and made a lot of guys into great players, so it'll be cool to learn from them.
Just so everybody knows, Troy's looking up the bodybuilder Connor Murphy on his phone here. Any thoughts?
No. You mentioned your father. I mean, he played a lot of years in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
How much has that helped, growing up and having a dad who played in the NHL? There's a lot of family with history of kids playing in the NHL, some good genes, obviously. But, what was the advice that he was giving to you as you were growing up?
Yeah, a lot. It's kind of starts when I was young. I'd be sitting watching TV, and coaches, it's insane in the amount of work that they do. Like, I've seen it at as players, you kind of just think your coach is on there on the ice with you and yelling at you. And then when you leave the ice, he goes home and does the same thing you do, just relaxes. But those guys are doing video work 24/7 and preparing and analyzing each player and preparing for the next team. And so he'd bring me over to the kitchen table and show me clips of things that he's looking at certain D-men.
And you were three.
Oh, no. No, I'd be, yeah, I would leave the cartoons at that age. it would be when I was getting into, like, being a young teenager and starting to do AAA hockey and stuff, and he'd show me if they're playing Detroit, Nicholas Lidstrom making a play, and certain things that he thought that I could take into my game and either take it or not. And it was just one of those things that you just, I was lucky because he knew that. And there's a lot of coaches in minor hockey that don't have that level of coaching and knowledge, and that I was able to pass along to me. So those little things added up along the years and have helped a lot.
So would your dad say to you at an early age, Connor, you're going to be a pro? This is what's going to happen to you? Or did he, like, when does that crystallize? Like, I have a chance to do this.
Yeah, you don't. Like, it seems like such a far-fetched thing that you don't even think is possible. Like, I grew up around Columbus and would go to the rinks there and watch the Blue Jackets when my dad coached there. And it was those guys seemed like just like gods to me. Just like, there's no way. I was like, they're gifted and there's no way you're getting there, sort of thing. But I just like try to play as hard as you can at every level you get to. And then once you get closer to your draft years and you start realizing you're getting scouted and there's a possibility, then it really sinks in.
When was that? When you thought, I mean, you know, as a father and a son who played, you know, hockey, you kind of sit there and you go, you know, he might make it, he might not. And then there's a reality that sinks in at some point that, you're either going to. When did that reality sink in that the possibility was that you could play or could opportunity?
It was a little later for me because I had a lot of injuries when I was younger. When I was 14, I had my spleen removed. I got hit along the boards and it cut me internally, and I had to be rushed to the hospital to get it removed. And then I came back, and the following year I had a stress fracture in my low back when I joined the USA team, and then I re-injured that the second year. And then the year after that, before I was getting drafted, I hurt my knee. And then the next year, hurt the other knee. And then my wrist. I had like 5 years in a row. And this was a while ago now. So my body's kind of caught up and gotten strong. And I'm 100% haven't had, knock on wood, in the last while. But so that's why it was later. I wasn't really amongst talks of being whatever that stuff until like right up until my draft year. So I wasn't a guy that was really highly projected until I was kind of getting into my U18 years. So when I'm 17, 18 years old, when there's talks of teams and the draft and stuff, that's when it kind of hits you that it's a possibility.
Well, the closest I ever came to a serious injury is I broke two recliners this season.
We go, Harry.
Now, I've been to a Coyotes game, and there are some young, beautiful people walking around in that building, but a lot of the residents are asleep by the time that you guys have your face off.
Yeah.
You're coming to the United Center now.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, original six, where you can feel the buzz when you get in the parking lot. You've been there as an opponent. Can you imagine that first game when you get to put the Indian head on and you get to skate out there and represent the Chicago Blackhawks?
Yeah, I mean, if there's a buzz at a something in the summer like this with such great people, then, I mean, that's even nothing compared to the buzz in that arena. We played on the road, and Coyotes aren't the highest sought after ticket, I don't think, to watch. Like, nothing. I love being there, but I think we just weren't the top in the league, so there weren't that many people. But still, you'd come to Chicago on a weeknight, and it would be buzzing in the rink. And that anthem, like, I don't think there's anything else in pro sports anywhere like the anthem here. And then that kind of feeds into the whole game. So that part alone, I'll have a lot of nerves, but it'll be exciting. I'll calm down and play hard.
And wrapping up here, Connor, I mean, you're stepping into this room. The team is relying on you. They're counting on you. They obviously wanted you very badly, trading Jalmerson to get you. But how do you step into that room with the guys that are on this team, with the Cups that have won in that room, and just hold yourself as, hey, I'm a young player, but I've been around, and I belong, and I can do this?
Yeah, well, that's it. I think it starts with your comfort level with your teammates and knowing that they feel comfortable with you and want you along their side on the ice. And getting in a little early to get to know some of those guys even here is comforting. And when that way you get into the room, you don't have those nerves, or you're not in a shell. You're ready to just show your stuff and leave it on the line. And I think we'll be able to do that from day one.
Real quickly, I know we got to head to a break here soon, but you and I were talking backstage there. You had an opportunity this week to maybe check out some places to live here in Chicago. Tell the story about checking out the apartment.
Well,
that might have been a little bit too high for you.
Yeah, no, I'm just not – I grew up in Columbus, not the biggest city, and being Arizona, we live in the suburbs. So here, just bigger city, looking at apartment buildings, a lot of them are high-rises, and I'm like a little scared of heights. And the other thing I didn't mention is that, like, I have slept walk in the past. Like, don't usually, but I do have. So, like, when I was really young, I woke up on the other side of a hotel in my underwear one time. But I was pretty young. So I'm like, my, like, nightmare is, like, I'm going to be in, like, some, I don't even want to say it, but But yeah, so he showed me, like, a realtor, he was showing me some nice place, and he showed me like a 70th floor of a place, and like you're riding the elevator, ears are popping, and you get into the corner unit with all windows, and I'm like hugging the walls, walking around the building, and he's like, check the view out on the deck. I'm like, no, like it's so high. I can't. But it's cool. So as long as it's not like, it's also like, as long as you're not too close to the glass, or I want just like small windows.
Beautiful three flats and little West Loop.
Yeah, well, there's some nice spots.
Right,
yeah,
I want to take him to Sears Tower. Yeah. Step out on that glass and look down 105 flights up. I mean, that's pretty cool. And yeah. I got to try that sleepwalking. Honey, I was sleepwalking.
Cotter, welcome to Chicago. Thanks for joining us, and the fans happy to have you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Quick timeout. Patrick Sharp coming right up, 720 WGN.
Tate posting up in front of the Bruin net. And now Sharp to the left wing corner, to the line. Here's Hossa. Here's Hossa with a drive. Stopped in front of the rebound. Sharp, he scores! Finally, a power play goal for the Blackhawks. This one is huge. The left wing, Teravainen. Over sticking down ice into the Lightning zone. A collision. Sharp with the gimme moves. And he scores! Patrick Sharp!
I want to make it clear that I'm coming back home to contribute to the Blackhawks on the ice in whatever role that may be. I'm coming back to make some more great memories and try to help this team win another Stanley Cup.
Yeah, baby, broadcasting live from the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago, brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland. Can you believe this, Troy Murray? Who are you looking at?
I thought that I walked up on the stage in this great, you know, applause, but I just realized that it's him.
No, it's the real number 19, Troy Murray.
Sharpie, welcome back. I mean, this is incredible. I know that you never wanted to leave. You're back here, and then the fans here in Chicago are excited. How excited are you to be back?
I'm pumped. Can you hear me on here?
Yeah.
Is everybody hearing this?
Get that right up. Get that right up in there.
Is that better? Everybody hear me now?
You sound great.
All right.
You also look great, for the record.
Thank you. Are you talking to him?
It's starting to sink in, you know, like signed on July 1st, and it felt good to be back with the Hawks. But until I came here and see the fans going crazy for the team and put the red jersey back on and see some of the guys that I played with in the past, it's starting to sink in, getting excited to play this year.
What was it like? I was there when you guys were in town on a weeknight, and you're in the visitor's locker room. You're skating on the Stars. What was it like to play against all your buddies and be in a Dallas uniform at the United Center?
Yeah, it was weird. It wasn't very much fun. And, Troy, you probably know this. You played on a few different teams over the years, and you see a guy you know or a buddy on the other team, it's not really fun to play against him. But, you know, multiply that by the whole team, the whole United Center, the fans, the locker room, everything. I like Dallas. Dallas treated me with a ton of respect, and they were great to me for those 2 years, but it felt weird to come back and play against the Hawks.
So you won a cup in 2010, another one in 2013, and then 2015. How happy is everybody that Patrick Sharp is back? I like hearing that stuff. So they've always loved you, and because you've been an incredible player and an incredible teammate. And I thought it was great when you said coming back here that, hey, I'm not about what happened in the past. I'm about creating a new memories. How's the hip? How are you feeling upstairs, the whole thing?
Feel good. Feel healthy. You know, it was a crappy year last year for a lot of different reasons. For me individually, for the team in Dallas, we had high expectations to try to build off what we did my first year there. And you know, for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. It was a rough season, and throw in a couple injuries on top of it, I finally got this hip cleaned up, which I've been meaning to do for a few seasons now, and it's about a four to six month rehab. I just saw Dr. Terry this past week at my 4 month checkup, and I'm good to go. I'm feeling healthy and as strong as ever, so can't wait to get back.
A lot of people, I think, you know, Patrick looked at it and you know, they saw some of the numbers last year, and the Blackhawks brought back Brian Campbell, Johnny Oduya, and they said, well, they're bringing another guy back here. But a little bit of a different situation with you. Is there some redemption that you want to, you know, have into your game this year after a lot of people say, well, you know, where is he at as far as his career? You come back here, you're excited. Is there redemption in your mind of what you need to do this year?
Right. I'm 35 years old. I just came off the worst season I've ever had as a pro. I just had major hip surgery, and like, you know, why is this guy coming back? Obviously, that's what the questions are, but last year just wasn't right. Last two seasons, you could even take it a step further and say my last year in Chicago didn't feel right. I'm in a place now mentally, physically, where I feel like I can get back and play like I know I can. You know, it's like I'm not coming back here to hang at the convention and have a great time with everybody. I'm coming back to play hockey, and I want to get out there and make sure I can do it. But this is fun hanging at the convention, too.
Could you, if you had wanted to, could you have gotten more and go play for another NHL club?
Yeah, but it's really I could have, but that's not what it's about. You know, the Wirtz family has been very generous to me and my family, and when it weighing the options of playing here or there or this place or coming back to Chicago, it was a no-brainer. And someone I have to thank for that is Soup. I talked to him all through last year, his decision coming home. I talked to him throughout the season and talked to him the good times, the bad times, and he just confirmed it for me.
I was actually talking to a gentleman earlier this week, and he was telling me that his team thought that you were going to – I'm not going to mention the team, but they thought that they had you signed. And he told me that there was a significant bigger, higher offer, and they were really disappointed. There was a lot of teams out there that wanted you to come, and I think there's a lot of belief that there's still got a lot left, and obviously here in Chicago that feeling is there. Marian Hossa's not going to play this year, and everybody knows that. That's a disappointment. Where do you see yourself fitting in? I know you're just going to say wherever it is, it is there. But, you know, you have the opportunity, and I think, to play in the mix of the top six again, obviously, and that's got to be exciting.
I watched all the Hawks games the last couple of years. I saw the young talent that they have. I met some of the younger guys this past week at the prospects camp. They're loaded with talent. So the team's in good shape going forward. I'm coming back. You know, it's an easy answer for me. I'm fortunate enough to be on three cup teams. Each team, first time I was a centerman. Second time I was a left winger on a second or first line, and the third time I was a third or fourth line right winger. So I feel that I can bring value to wherever Joel puts me. That's why Joel's the best, is because he puts guys in positions to succeed. He wants that player to do what they do best, and I'm showing up ready to play, and wherever I play, I'm sure I'll play with everybody at some point in the course of the season. That's what we play the 82 games to find out.
If somebody had told you the Hawks were going to trade for Brandon Saad and it was going to be Artemi Panarin, would you, you know, as an outsider looking in and talking to guys like Soup, would you have been shocked by that?
That's a big trade. Trades like that shock everybody, and it's not about the players involved. I mean, last summer, what was it? Weber for Subban. That caught everybody off guard. You know, Taylor Hall getting traded to New Jersey. It's not always the two players in the trade. We think this guy's better than that guy, or this guy is better than this guy. It's about team needs. You know, there's so much that goes into a trade. That's why I think Stan and his staff have such an unfair job. Like, it's easy to sit back and criticize a trade or praise him for another trade. It's like he's building the best team that he can every year. He's putting the Hawks and their fans in a position to win the Stanley Cup every year. As a player and a fan, I think that's all you can really ask for.
You know, you talked about 82 games. You're going to play with everybody. You know, I'm surprised Coach Q wasn't moving players around yesterday watching the video, you know, after you got introduced. So if you come out and you're with Anisimov and Kane, that could change in a week. Or if you're on a third line, that could change in a week. So
right.
how important is your comfort level with Joel Quenneville?
You said it. That's what I'm comfortable with. You know, I've been here in the past for 10 years, seven or eight of them with Joel, and we saw a number of new players come in, and they couldn't quite figure that out. They're like, why? Well, I'm playing on a different line every week. I have half the game with this guy and another player. And for me, it was normal. That's what I'm used to with Joel. So I welcome that. You know, it gives every player – what it does is it gives every player an opportunity to play, right? It's like you earn your ice time out there. You know, I watched the last two seasons. That line with Kaner was like – that first season I was gone, that was the best line in hockey, hands down, right? And now Jonathan Toews maybe doesn't get in those offensive opportunities because he's got a line on his team that is doing what they're doing. So it's like it's a give and take and everything. If you're playing, if you're ready to go, Joel's going to find a way to get you out there.
So you're in Dallas, and obviously that's a big rivalry within the same division in the NHL. What's Dallas's outlook, or what's their opinion of the Chicago Blackhawks? Because it always seems to me that they want to beat Chicago, but they haven't been able to find the way to do it.
I noticed every time the Hawks came on the schedule, we played our best in Dallas against the Hawks for the most part. You know, it's there's a certain feeling when the Hawks roll into town or the visiting team comes to United Center. It's one thing I noticed leaving in 2015 is that every game out of the 82 that the Hawks play, they're getting the best from the opponent.
They're getting the A game.
You know, and playing in Dallas, Last year we saw that because we were the Western Conference champs the year before. I'll say my first year in Dallas, there were games I went into St. Louis thinking, oh, man, let's put the big shoulder pads on. This is going to be a battle out there. And then you get on the ice, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is Dallas and St. Louis playing. It's not the Hawks-Blues rivalry. So each team, like, you kind of get up for each other in a different way. And the Hawks are one of those teams that have a tough battle every single night.
Did you have a sense going to the playoffs last year that the Hawks might have trouble with Nashville?
I thought if the Hawks were going to lose in the playoffs, it was going to be a Central Division team that was going to get them, whether it was Minnesota, St. Louis, or Nashville. I'm not saying they all would have beat them. I said if they go down, it's most likely going to be one of those teams. I just think that division in the Central, you could throw Winnipeg in there. You can throw Dallas in there. Every team is so competitive, and they all know how to play each other. You know, those games are like playoff games. Troy, you watch. You're at every game. It's like when Nashville and Minnesota play in February, that's a big game. That's a tough game to play in. And so I just figured if anyone's going to knock off the Hawks, it's going to be a team that's familiar with them. And, you know, unfortunately, it was Nashville.
The Blackhawks, to a man, appreciate not only the way the fans show up at the United Center for every game, but there's always red on the road. Having been away for a couple of years and, you know, seeing like maybe there's a couple guys with stars on when you guys were on the road, but they were like Cowboy fans that were just lost. So, I mean, like, how much more do you appreciate the way the Blackhawk fans travel and support this team, whatever building you're in?
Right. Going down to Dallas in Texas, I was warned about, you know, it's not a hockey market. I was pleasantly surprised with the fan base in Dallas. Every game was exciting at our building down there. All my interactions with the Stars fans were positive and pleasant. They're really nice people. It's cool, but, you know, we're playing the Hawks in Dallas on a Saturday night, and the majority of the crowd is wearing red. You know, that tells you something about Chicago fans. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of Cubs fans and White Sox fans in here as well. When you turn on the TV and you see the Cubs playing in Arizona, you see a lot of Cubs fans in the building as well. So I think it's just Chicago fans in general, but hitting home with us, it's these awesome Hawks fans.
Outside of playing, what did you miss most about the city?
You know, just I like to stay home a lot. So my house, okay. My neighborhood that I have in Lakeview, you know, I said it a few times today already. Some of these people probably are sick of me saying it, but 10 years, I'm a huge baseball fan, and for 10 years, the Cubs were not doing anything. And then I left to go down to Texas, and the 2 years I'm gone, they win the damn World Series in my neighborhood.
Yourself.
So I missed out on all of that, but, you know, I just missed the feeling of the city. You know, I enjoyed the 2 years in Texas. It is nice getting off the plane in January or February and having 75 degrees and warm. You know, it's nice sitting in the backyard and getting some sun in the winter, but I just miss my day-to-day life in my neighborhood here in Chicago.
It's no score Cubs and Cardinals in the seventh, by the way, Wrigley, just so you know.
Sure.
I want to know, going back to last year and then looking at this year, Jonathan Tay said yesterday to the Summer Reporters I was reading today that he's not going to be quote-unquote Captain Serious, that he's going to try to lighten up. Can you see him doing that? It's like he's trying to change something. What's your thoughts on that?
I think both those guys, Johnny and Kaner, they have these reputations, right? Johnny is Mr. Serious, and Kaner is the fun, outgoing party guy, and I think both those reputations kind of meet somewhere in the middle. You know, I don't think Johnny's as hardcore Captain Serious as everybody makes him out to be. And I think Kaner is a little more serious than people do give him credit for. So I think, personally speaking, when I'm smiling, when I'm having fun, when I'm joking at the rink, that's when I play my best hockey. When I'm laser focused and trying to worry about line combinations and who we're playing and how I played last game and all that, there's too much going on in my head. So for Giant to say that, I didn't see the comments, but, you know, I'm happy I'm on his side. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. The task at hand is to get another cup, a fourth Stanley Cup to the greatest fans in the world. But looking back, do you have a favorite moment? You know, was it the first Stanley Cup? Was it when the two guys on the Lightning collided and you got that, you know, free goal?
Yeah.
Gracing the cover of Chicago Magazine? What's your favorite memory of life as a Hawk?
I think it's all just blends into one memory. You know, there's so many hockey memories, so many great teammates on those three championship teams. You know, I was lucky. One of my first years pro hockey, we won a championship in Philly in the minors. And I could tell you the whole team, top to bottom, line combinations, all that stuff. And we got to do that three times in Chicago. So that's with three different teams. You know, seven guys were on all three teams, but the rest were all different players. And, you build those memories. They're in there somewhere. And honestly, some of my best feelings and memories are, like, my dad loves baseball as well. We would walk over to Wrigley Field. We'd sit down, watch the Cubs game. And as we're walking out to our seats, there'd be a Hawks fan that would just like, "Hey, Sharpie, you're the man. What's up?" You know, and that's like a warming feeling. You know, you miss that when you don't have it. And I'm not talking about, like, pumping the ego and thinking you're cool and everything, but it's just like, it's crazy to feel that love from the fans. And that's probably why I didn't really feel like myself the last couple of years, being away from it and being here at the convention. You get reminded just how special it is to be a Hawk.
Maybe the most important question here is Shooter happy to be back in Chicago?
Shooter's pumped. Shooter the Basset Hound is really excited.
Yes.
Yeah, he's really happy.
Yeah, I don't know if you're out there, but you can sense the excitement in Patrick's voice. I mean, he's excited to be back, and that's great. I mean, you know, we always loved you here, and I'm certainly happy to have you back.
I appreciate that, Trent.
Thanks for stopping by today. Have a great season, Patrick Sharp.
All right, thank you very much for having me.
Coming on back, Dennis Savard after 5 o'clock, 720 WGN.
Here comes Gwen Anderson. His pass knocked down by Savard. Skates through center. Savard still has it around Keegan. Around Long, shoots, scores! What a goal by Dennis Savard!
Back to the beat.
You tell me how that one went in, but what a shot. Just a beautiful play by Savard.
On 720 WGN.
7 Fair coming up in a matter of moments, broadcasting live from the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago. We're brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland. He's Harry Tynowitz. He's Troy Murray. I am Mark Carman. Great to be with you out here. I got to tell you, the diehards have left. Everybody came for Patrick Sharp, but the true diehard Hawk fans are still out here. Thank you very so much. A couple people might have left the building here. How does that make you feel, Troy?
Troy Murray's here, so that's pretty damn good. And, yeah, great job, by the way.
We got that going for us, don't we?
Well, we should mention that once again, I believe they've only been doing the awards 7 years, and you and John Weideman and Judd Surratt, of course, from WGN, won for the fourth time as the best broadcast team. Congratulations, Troy.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting, and I think it's a real nice honor that I take a lot of pride in. I've been doing it, I think, for 14 years now. John and I think, for 11 years. And again, I mean, I think John's got one of the best calls in hockey.
No question.
You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I do listen to a lot of the other broadcasts, and I'm amazed at how good he is and really enjoy it. And obviously, the product on the ice is pretty good, and it's exciting. And I think you can kind of relate that in our broadcast, you know, just the way things have gone here in the last 10 years.
I do get amazed by your stamina. You do the pregame show, you do the game, and then Judd comes on for the postgame. It's like you haven't even talked all day. You're ready to go. You have something going on for you, Troy, it's special, it's unique. You're a talent. I want to compliment you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. It's true, though. You really do. After 3 hours being on the air, you sound like you haven't even been talking.
I love to go to the rink. I mean, you know, when I retired, I was a commodities trader, and I went down to the Merck every day for 7 years, and I enjoyed it, and, you know, I was fairly successful in that next phase, and then they asked me to get into the broadcasting, and, you know, hockey's my passion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love to be there. It's not like it's a chore to go to work. We're traveling first class now, and we're staying in all the top-rated hotels on the road, and you get some great cities, but I get to talk about hockey. And to me, that's not a job. And as long as I can kind of do it and talk about it, I'm in no hurry to get out of the rink.
Some guys don't appreciate it, though, like you do. And I think that resonates with the fans. It resonates with me. I think it's great.
As a fan, I love the One More Shift promotion. And most recently, in fact, it was the night that they played the Stars, Eddie Belfour was honored. How great is it for you, as a guy who played with a lot of the guys they're bringing back, to see the Hawks come up with this idea and this concept of bringing back great players to suit up and be on the ice for the anthem for one more shift?
That's a great point. I think that, you know, the Blackhawks have done such a phenomenal job here in the last little while, and it's not only it's the One More Shift, it's the ambassador program, which we can talk about with Dennis when he comes up here, to reconnect the generations of fans You know, a lot of the kids don't remember me. They don't remember Dennis, but the parents do, and they say, you know, boy, Dennis Savard was a great player. Tony Esposito, you know, Bobby Hall, everybody kind of remembers him. And I think that's a huge step in the right direction that John McDonough did when he came here. And it was really important. One of the first things, and a lot of people don't realize this, one of the first things that John did after he was hired here, he had a meeting with our alumni association. It was John and myself and Cliff Coral, and we met out in a hotel in the suburbs. And we had coffee and we talked about it, and John said, how do we repair this relationship with the alumni? How do we welcome you guys back? And basically we just said, ask us. We want to be a part of it. We want to, you know, we're all Blackhawks, and I came here in 82 and never left. I'm a Blackhawk wherever I played. I still had a home here in Chicago, and I think it's important that you look at these guys, and for the fans who are here, I think it's a great way to connect to the past. I mean, the stories that, you know, Dennis can talk about, that Tony can talk about, we're going to have both of those guys on the air here. I think that's incredible, and it's just it really goes to show what the Blackhawks have done here to bring back generations of fans, to bring everybody collectively as one, and support the team that's on the ice now.
Well, Harry's wearing his jersey. He's your teammate. Why don't we bring up Dennis Savard, who is ready to go.
My buddy Savvy.
Savvy. Great.
So
Savvy looks like he could still play too.
I mean, there's no doubt. Always ready to go with the energy, and great to have you up here. So I want to start with a little curveball here. Patrick Kane, a bunch of guys have been saying that the Pittsburgh Penguins are the class of the league, and that's what everyone's shooting for right now. What do you think about that, Savvy?
Well, they've twice in a row they've won the Cup, so you got to respect that, you know. And then they've competed in the last 2 years. Amazingly, you know, it's very, very difficult to win a Cup 1 year, let alone 2 years in a row. I mean, it takes a lot of heart, a lot of desire, and they've competed and deserved all the credit they've been getting here the last little while. You know, for me, I watched the playoffs, you know, I was amazed, and I know that he's been a great player, we all know that, and probably one of the top ever in Sidney Crosby. How he competed is what we did when we won the Cups. You know, when our teams won the Cups here, the guys competed that way. I think that this year, you know, obviously we fell very short of what the expectations are, but you got to give Nashville a lot of credit. I mean, this is a young team that was hungry. Like we were in 2010 when we had all those young players together. They were very hungry, and they really jumped on us. And part of it, too, you know, looking back, and it's easy after looking at everything, after it's all said and done, but, you know, we finished the season, we were seated already with 4 or 5 games to go. They were still fighting for a playoff spot. You know, they came
in. I think they were the last team to get it into the playoffs.
There you go. Troy does his homework. Is he good or what? I listen to him a lot. He knows that. I text him during the game sometimes. But anyway, you know, for me, you know, I like to, you know, I'm a horse guy. You guys know horses. Harry knows horses. But, you know, sometimes a horse could run his best race, and the next day they call the bounce. You know, meaning like they don't run the same way the second time because they run so hard the first time. So I would call their team last year, just give them a pass. Let's give them a bounce, you know, because of what Nashville did too. They were a tremendous team. Loved their defense. They were active, you know, something that, you know, when we play teams over the last decade or so, we've been putting teams on their heels. Well, you know, they're tight. They took a bit after what we've done over the years. That's how they played against us. And, you know, we just didn't play the way we could play. And part of it, like I said, they came in the playoffs with a lot of momentum. You know, I mean, they really worked hard to get there. And we kind of went into the playoffs, you know, knowing we were seeded number one in our conference. And, you know, probably didn't play the same way that we should have played at the end. So combination of a little bit of everything here, it cost us to be swept in the first round. But, you know, you look at the big picture, you look at the core guys, they're still here, they're still young. We're still going to be all right, you know, with, you know, Kaner and Taser and Sieves and Donk and Crow and that. You know, we're going to be fine. I like, obviously, the addition. I know Panarin was a good player for us. He played well last year and the year before. But I like Saad. You know, I always tell this story. And Troy, you know, we played together for a long time, and him and Fraz and Eddie were a great line, and we had myself and Al and Larms together. Well, for me, when I lost Larmer as a winger, when I left here to go to Montreal, it was difficult. I had a really tough time. I was not the same player. I'm not afraid to say that because of the fact that, you know, we had that connection together. We kind of knew where we were going to be on the ice and the expectation of each other, how we challenged each other on the bench. We did. You know, we had a lot of fights together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, joy will tell you.
So, you guys went out like cats and dogs on the bench.
Yeah. So seeing Taser back with Saad, with Brendan, I think it's going to be tremendous. I like that move. I really do. I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, you saw Pittsburgh. I talked about Crosby and how much character and how much grit and how much desire that he has when he plays. We've got that here. We know that. You don't win three cups in 9 years because you don't have it. We have that, and I think having Sutter back is going to help us.
You kind of mentioned it, Savvy, that, you know, when the Blackhawks lost 2 years ago to St. Louis, hard-fought seven-game series, you're not going to win all the time, and St. Louis was a good team, and they were on a pretty good run that year. When you lose 2 years in a row in the first round, especially the way that they lost last year, mm-hmm. in my mind, and obviously the organization's mind, you have to make some changes. I like what the team has done as far as making the changes, and you don't want to lose, you know, the players of Jalmerson and stuff, but there's also some cost certainty that they've taken care of as far as the, you know, the salary cap issues that they've been dealing with. They can function in a more normal way moving forward because they know that they have some players here that yeah. are going to be here. This, in some ways, it shouldn't be a surprise. You can't sit at status quo and say that, well, we're just going to hope it happens next year because you know that Nashville is good. They're young. They're going to be better. Minnesota's got a good team. They're fast. Winnipeg had a little bit of an off year. Dallas had an off year. You just can't sit and live on your laurels. And that's what Stan did this summer. He kind of did a leap of faith here and said, you know what, I'm not going to wait around another year. I'm going to make some moves.
Yeah, and I agree with it because – you know, like you said, the bottom line is, and you know, we know the expectations here. I mean, this management has, you know, obviously made a lot of changes over the last decade, and it's about winning, and they want to win. Being getting knocked out of the first round, they said it. I mean, they were upset. I saw the press conferences, and I know they're upset. So, and they said it was unacceptable.
And you know what? Upset, but shocked.
Yeah. I was shocked. I was shocked, honestly. I mean, I knew Nashville playing during the year, you know, decent team, but, you know, they didn't show that in the regular season, I don't think, anyway. Not that the games that I've watched, you know, but I did see that in the first round. So, yeah, I was shocked too, T. I was like, oh, wow, I don't know what happened, but anyway, we got to turn the page. We call it a bounce. Remember my word, it's a bounce.
It's a bounce, baby.
I'm just glad that Nashville could finally fill their building, you know. It took them the Stanley Cup, but they finally filled the building.
With about 5,000 of our fans going to the games. So
right,
8,000,
right.
Yeah.
Savvy, Brandon Saad and Patrick Sharp are both coming back to the organization. And something you did. I remember how excited we were when the Hawks made the deal with the Tampa Bay to bring you back. What are the perils, the pitfalls they have to watch out for when they're
question.
Coming back?
So you get very excited. I was very excited. You know, my career was kind of starting to trend this way, not this way.
I know the feeling.
This way. So, so it was trending this way. But, you know, I said this when I got, you know, back here. You know, as a player, I don't know how Troy feels, but I'm sure it feels the same way as I do somewhat. And because, you know, when you put in another uniform, as you know, I played for a great organization, Montreal, and Tampa was fun too. But it just felt right when I put my uniform back on. I felt like I was where I belonged, and the excitement of coming back and knowing that we had a good team, you know, this team was, you know, contending for the Stanley Cup, and I knew that my energy level had to be picked up from what I did in Tampa. And you know, Daryl Sutter was my coach, who I played with, kind of knew me as a person, so kind of really let me kind of play the way I could play. So yeah, I mean, that my first year, my first year coming back, you know, was, I mean, I think I had a good playoff. I had 7 goals, 11 assists, or something like that. And I,
in one game.
No, yeah, right. But I scored my first game back against Detroit. That I remember. That was pretty cool. We lost, but it was fun to be back and said, you know. But I could honestly say, you know, and Sharpie's going to be good help for us. I think he's going to be rejuvenated. I think he's going to get healthy, you know. It's a different time, different era. You know what? At 36, the life that we live in our days and today is totally different. So I was done. I was done at 36. You know, and guys at 37, 38 today, they could still play. So for me, I knew that 1 year and the following year, I really started to trend this way because I was so motivated to play that year when I came back. And not that you kind of lose that part of motivation at some point in your life and your career, especially as a hockey player. When you played 16, 15, 17, 18 years, it's hard.
Who are you playing with 88? I know it'll change 1,000 times, but if it's up to you and it's the start of the season, you want to see how this goes, what would you do?
Well, you know, yeah, you have to see. I think that Sharpie would fit there, right? He has to be a guy that's going to play in the top six, you know, depending. I haven't really saw him this week, but I haven't really talked to him as far as health is concerned. So, you know, but I think that's what Q's going to do. Sauter, I think Richard Panik's been a great addition over the years. I like the way this guy plays. He's played well in the playoffs. He's one of the guys that stands out in the series against Nashville for me and even the prior series against St. Louis. He plays hard. He plays with a physical game with a grit in it. I mean, he's got some skill. So I think, you know, when you look at our, if you want to call it top line with Taser and Sod and Panik, we got size there. So, you know, I think Sharpie, I don't know, Troy, what do you think? You know, do you think he fits there?
Or? We had Patrick on here a little bit earlier on the show, and, you know, we're kind of throwing it out there. And in my mind, you know, the loss of Marian Hossa obviously leaves a void a little bit. But if Patrick Sharp, and he was talking about his health, he feels good. He wants to come back. He's excited. I see him playing with Anisimov and Patrick Kane. And I think he's 20, 25 goals. You know, he's excited to be back here. He can still skate. He can still play. And then I think that really gives the Blackhawks an opportunity to look at if you want to call them the bottom six, and put the some lines together, put Nick Schmaltz back into his normal position at center. We talked about Ryan Hartman having such a great season last year. He's a hard guy to play against. You know, there's going to be a position open.
I like Tanner Carroll.
Tanner Carroll maybe be playing with Lance Bowman, Tommy Wingles is a real physical, you know, energy type of line. You know, and maybe it's an Alex DeBrincat that comes out. Maybe it's a John Hayden. They've got some nice options up front, and I think Patrick Sharp, you know, I think that the mindset of the Blackhawks, the coaching staff and the management have Patrick Sharp kind of penciled into that line on the left side with Anisimov and Patrick Kane. Sharpie's really diplomatic about it. Wherever they put me, I'm going to be happy. But I think that if they put him in that position, he's going to be excited to play.
And how are we not calling Tanner Carroll American Carroll? Like, that's a perfect nickname for him, right? He's from America, you know, Triple Crown horse, American Pharaoh. That's a perfect nickname for him. Troy was talking about how this jersey is from his rookie season, and you were kind enough to sign it for me. And the old man, Bill Wirtz, gave me this jersey. I'll always be grateful for it. But I said, I don't know how many times Savvy used the fighting strap, and Troy was saying, oh, Savvy will surprise you. He said he was a southpaw, left-hander.
I watched this guy get into a couple scraps. The good old days with the Minnesota North Stars.
And it's all
the
fear.
The Toronto Maple Leafs. That's a great one where Dave Manson went off the ice. He came back on the ice, and and Todd Gill, I think, were sparring for like 5 minutes, and it was great.
And Andy Vanderman was telling, you know, we're sparing off because I really don't want to fight, to be honest, because I'm like this. Gary Lehman at the time, bigger and stronger or whatever. So we're going like this, and Van Elman says, you guys want to fight? I said, no, I don't.
Well, what's that like, though, for you guys, when you get in that moment and you know it's your turn and you've got to go, and I would, like you're saying, you're scared to do it. I mean, how do you get yourself in the right mindset? All right, this is it. It's on. It's just, I guess I'm going to do everything I can to survive, huh?
Yeah, for me it was. I mean, I wasn't a fighter, obviously, but, you know, at some point, sometime in our careers, we all had to fight and defend ourselves and protect ourselves. So, it's about go as hard as you can, as fast as you can, and hopefully that, you know, the referees get in there. That was my thinking.
But it was also, too, Savvy, it was a different game back then. You know, even, you know, if you were going to come in today's game, you compare yourself to like a Patrick Kane, the offensive type of player that, you know, you came into the NHL as. But you back in those days, you were still tested. And you know, it's like the bully taking your lunch money. And until you stood up to them, they were going to keep taking your money. So, you know, for you and everybody else in our era that we came in the NHL, you got tested. And as long as you pass that test, you know, it's okay, he's going to defend himself. He'll back himself up. Not that you wanted to do it all the time. There was a lot of players that obviously had that role. You know, you had Al Secord, Rocky, you know, patrolling your side. I had Kurt Fraser on my line. So you knew that physical element was there. But you also, you know, you had to back yourself up, and that's a little bit different from the way that the game is now.
And to come back, a great point, and to come back to what I talked earlier about, you know, 36, 17 years, your body's tired, you're mentally tired, you know. And what I go back to what Troy is saying is every playoff or even divisional games, I didn't sleep very good the night before. I don't think you did either. I mean, I know I've had Al to protect me, but you know that somewhere in that game, at some point, sometime, somebody's going to come after us pretty vicious. So that's why, for me, part of why in our times, I think the game is better today. It's not, don't tell them, I'm not saying it's not hard. It's very hard. But, you know, in our days, it was fear, a lot of fear. I mean, I know I had it, and I know that I had to prepare for it. I had to mentally say, you know, in my mind, before I went on the ice in the morning, I'd say, hey, they're out there just to play hockey. You go play. They're not out there to hurt you. I had to really tell myself that all the time, because if you play with a little bit of fear, you know, you're not going to be able to have a good result.
So if it came out that, hey, we want to protect the players, if you fight, you're getting kicked out, we're changing the rules, how would you guys feel about that? It could happen someday. It hasn't.
You know, I'm still a proponent about, you know, players protecting the game within
policing the game
within itself. And I know that the NHL wants to change the rule, and, you know, for the younger players, the younger kids coming up, that, you know, it's a little bit different. But that intimidation factor back in our day, you know, was a big thing as far as who was going to win a series and all that kind of stuff. But we always knew, you know, and as a broadcaster, and I don't like to say this, but, you know, when teams start taking runs at Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, and there's not the response that Dennis and I used to have before, because I played against Wayne Gretzky, and I knew that if I was going to cross the line with Wayne Gretzky, Dave Semenko was there. And, you know, sorry to hear that Dave Semenko just passed away recently too, one of the toughest guys to ever play. But you knew that factor was there, and there was always, to me and in my mind, there was a clean-cut line in the sand. And if you crossed it, you were going to be held accountable.
Yep.
And that accountability now has drifted into different areas, and I'm not sure it's the best thing for the game, because you look at Sidney Crosby with the concussions that he's had. The players are taking liberties like they've never been taken before against some of the top players in the NHL, and I think that's because that fear factor, that if you cross the line, is not there.
And plus, you know, when you get hit dirty, like some of our guys get hit at times around the league, you know, to revenge yourself, to go after the guy, you got to be careful now, because they gave suspension. It costs a lot of money. 3 games, making a couple million.
Yeah, I mean, so, it's changed that way, and the game's probably never been better. I mean, you look at the excitement in the city of Chicago, it's never been more popular. The United Center is sold out, and the athletes are better, they're faster. You don't slow the game down at all now. It's played at 100 miles an hour. It's exciting, but I miss that element that kept kind of the peace within the game itself, because there was that fear factor that, you know, I knew that if I crossed that line, that somebody was going to hold me accountable.
You two are being politically correct. As a hockey fan my whole life, if they took fighting out of the game, that would suck.
Harry's sitting over there saying, no, hasn't been in a fight in his life, and he's just the tough guy on the panel right now. Look at him.
But come on, I got Marty McSorley over.
But Harry, but also I think that, you know, from maybe the older generation, you know, who remembers like Al Secord? Who had an Al Secord jersey? You know, I mean, those were some of the most popular players.
No question.
You know, Probert, when he was in Detroit in his heyday, he was, you know, he was just he was a god there, because of the way he played the game. And you know, the hockey mentality is kind of that blue collar.
Proby.
We like that. But and Proby, you know, yeah. you know, I mean, you're a good friend of his. Again, you know, sorry. That obviously he's passed away, but at the same time, those players were the characters of the game, and people when Al Secord was on the ice and Willie Plett was on the ice, the fans got on the edge of their seats, and it may not have happened that shift, it may not have happened that game, but there was always that opportunity that something was going to happen, and you weren't going to buy popcorn, you weren't going to buy, you know, you're going to the washroom during, you know, those old North Star rivalry games, because there was that buildup was there. and the possibility of, you know, two guys that honestly didn't like each other, we're gonna get into it.
Dino Ciccarelli, those were
there. You're good.
Right.
There you
go. I mean, come on. All right, Dennis, great to see you. Always awesome to see 18.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. We're here. Thanks to all our fans for being this weekend, guys.
We're gonna have John Hayden coming up right after the 5:30 news. 720 WGN. Well, I know they're not playing the Yale fight song for me. That was not where I attended my college years. Welcome back. This is the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention live from the Hilton Chicago, brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicago. And John Hayden, the Yale graduate, joins us now with Troy Murray and Harry Tynowitz. It was a great story this summer. You play for the Hawks. You go back to Yale for graduation. You get called up for an award. Theo Epstein, Cubs president, is the presenter. Theo takes off his Cubs hat. Correct me if I'm wrong here, John. Puts on his Yale hat. He puts his Cubs hat in the whatever on the old podium there. You steal Theo's hat. Is that a true story?
Correct. Yale has a unique tradition of instead of wearing the traditional cap, you wear a hat that represents something about yourself. And obviously Theo's done great things for Yale and the Cubs, so when he switched hats, I thought it was a good opportunity on stage to show some Chicago pride and obviously take Theo's hat. So it was a cool experience.
Did he know that you took the hat?
Yeah, he saw it, and then I went over and shook his hand and let him know that he wasn't getting it back.
That's amazing. That's good work right there. So you're in school and you're playing for the Blackhawks all at the same time. That's a pretty amazing accomplishment.
You're taking some courses while you were here in Chicago, yeah. Right? You're finishing up some courses?
Right. I intentionally front-loaded my schedule, so I had extra classes in the fall because I anticipated something like this happening. And then I still had a few classes in the spring, but the teachers were pretty accommodating. So I actually did take a few courses on the road and was writing some papers, like you said, but I got it done.
See, Carmen and I backloaded our college classes. You know, year seven, we finished.
That's true. That's a very good point, Harry.
But I remember dating a girl who wanted to go out with this guy because he was the lead in the play. Can you imagine dating a girl and was like, well, I could date you, or there's this guy on the Chicago Blackhawks. You come to the Hawks, you're playing right away, and in your second game in the hockey mecca of Toronto, you lit the lamp. What was that moment like, John?
It was special. I had family there at the Air Canada Center, and the game before I had a lot of family in Ottawa. So it was just a special stretch of days, and then we went right back to the UC and had a back-to-back games. And so that Sunday I experienced my first win at the UC. So all in all, it was special. And obviously it was pretty cool playing with Johnny Toews for my first few games.
You had the opportunity to come and play for the Blackhawks. Obviously the season didn't end the way that anybody was expecting or hoping to. But how do you use that experience for the short time that you were here at the end of last season, coming into this year, getting a little bit of knowledge about what it takes to play in the NHL?
Well, first of all, I think it's invaluable to show up to training camp with familiar faces. The players and the staff did a great job welcoming me to the team a couple months ago, so that'll help. And then I think it's just important to recognize how competitive the league is in games and practice. It's a grind, and I think I understand that the game's always getting faster, so that's something that I've addressed the last couple of months.
So, yeah, I was going to ask you that. So in the offseason, you talked to Paul Goodman, the strength and conditioning coach of the Blackhawks. So what was the focus on your off-season training this year?
It was primarily speed. I think for the rest of my career, I'll be addressing speed and skill because the game's going to keep getting faster. For me, as a bigger guy, I think the faster I get, that'll just push my game and accelerate my game.
So, okay, hold on a second. You play 12 games. You get into one of the playoff games versus Nashville. How do you handle, I don't know if I'm in the lineup, I'm keeping myself prepared, I can't be super disappointed, I don't want to be angry at Q, there's other great players in the room, just balancing between just, you know, fighting to be out there and then just handling the disappointment when you're not?
I think it's just about coming to the rink every day and working hard. And some of the best advice I got was, listen, this is hockey, the sport you've been playing since you were 5 years old, and it's going to be competitive. You're at the top level, so really every day I would just show up, and even the guys that I was competing with for ice time were super supportive. So they've obviously established such a great culture here in Chicago.
That, you know, honestly, that is one of the one things. And it's kind of unique, and I don't know what it's like in the other sports, obviously. But you're here to take somebody's job. And,
yep.
And you know, it's a profession now, and it's a job. It's a lifestyle, and you know, it's not going to school with the teammates and you're trying to graduate or what are you doing. You know, when you're coming through minor leagues, there's always, I know I'm going to be there next year and these teammates are going to be here. You get to the NHL and you want to play in the NHL, but you've got a teammate sitting next to you, and that guy sitting next to you might be the guy that you have to beat out if you're going to play in the National Hockey League. And I had to do that, you know, in my career early on. And it's a tough line to draw. But everybody's supportive. Everybody wants everybody to succeed. You know, now you're in that position where, you know, you've got to come here and you've got to be a good teammate. But at the same time, you know, your purpose coming into training camp is to find a solid spot on the roster. That's kind of a little bit of an interesting concept, isn't it?
Interesting concept for sure. But there's obviously that respect level in the locker room that everyone has for each other. I think everyone's on the same page. It's going to be competitive. So you show up, get on the ice ready to work. That, you know, everyone's so close, and I could tell just from the month and a half I spent with the team.
Blackhawk power forward John Hayden hanging out with us in the Grand Ballroom at the Conrad Hilton Hotel. It's the 10th annual Blackhawks Convention in Troy. Murray, Mark Carmen, and I are on the beat. You know, there's a lot of young guys in that locker room, but there's also a lot of guys just by osmosis that you can learn a lot from. Was there one veteran in particular that you took to, that you sat with on planes, or was it a group of guys? Who were you, besides the coaches, who were you learning from last season?
First of all, I spent a ton of time with the younger guys, Schmaltzy, Vinny, and Hartsey, especially away from the rink. We really stuck together, and that was comforting because obviously when you take a step to the next level, to see guys that you had played with in the past just made it a little more realistic and settled the nerves. And then when I found out that I'd play my first few games with Jonathan Toews, he gave me some great advice. Dunks gave me great advice. Really a ton of guys. I could go down the list, and, you know, Toots comes to mind. So
I think it's important, too, that, you know, when you're talking about the young guys, when I came in, we had Dennis Savard on here. I mean, you know, we were kind of the same age. We were drafted in the same draft year. You know, that was my core group of guys with Steve Larmer, Eddie Olczyk. You know, that was our core group of guys. You're a part of this next generation core group of guys, and at some point, you know, you're going to be the older guys inside the locker room. You're going to be that core group of guys when the Toews and the Canes have moved on from their hockey career. And it's special because, you know, you guys going through this process, growing as a group of young players, and I think it's exciting for, you know, myself as the broadcaster and the team to have such a good core group of young guys. That's important that everybody kind of understands that, and you guys are close-knit on and off the ice.
Absolutely, and I think the younger core guys definitely learn from the older guys who have established this championship culture in Chicago. But, it's important for us to spend a lot of time together away from the rink because it just creates that bond that definitely improves our on-ice play.
This is your first convention,
correct?
What do you think about it?
It's incredible. I was saying I'm surprised more teams don't do this. It's such a special event, and I've said multiple times this week that my first game in Ottawa had more Chicago fans than Islanders fans, and that seemed to be a trend on all of our away games. So I think it's just special. It's clear that there's a ton of success on the ice, but you know, it really wouldn't be the same without this tremendous fan support.
Have you had an opportunity? What have you done this summer? You traveled a little bit after the season's over. What'd you do?
Oh, I left the Nashville series and went back to Yale
for
about a month. And
you hung with Theo.
Chilled with Theo. That was special. But it was just nice to, I mean, I guess the silver lining of losing was really just being there for my family and being able to walk and experience a true graduation. And my friends and family and everyone at Yale was so supportive during the month and a half I was in Chicago. So it was really nice to get back and just enjoy some time with them. And now I've been working out with a few other players in Connecticut. And Ben Prentice has a great strength and conditioning set up there. So I'm just doing what I can to show up in September.
And you got family in Chicago, right? And that's got to be a little more comfortable for you.
Yeah, my grandfather still lives downtown. So it's nice being here and having easy access.
You go out to dinner with him at least once a week, take him out somewhere? I mean, what kind of grandson are you here, John?
are you a good grandson?
I am. You should get him on here and ask him. I'm going to answer that.
I was reading about your class load here because as we were going over, and I was telling Harry before, I thought about going to Yale too, Troy. And so it says that
you thought about it.
I thought about it. It says your classes included a seminar on terrorism as you work to complete your degree in political science. So you're not messing around. You've got other interests. I'm wondering, like, how you, with your family, like, hey, we've got a smart kid here. Are you really sure you want to pursue your athletics when you obviously have the academic side as well?
Yeah, hockey is my true passion. I think the great thing about Yale is you can get a first-class education while playing for a winning program with the best coach in college hockey. So that was special to be able to do that.
The Bulldogs, baby. You don't see that every day. Most guys who are playing, they start playing juniors at what, 15, 16 yeah. years old. They're, yeah,
I
they're
I
not going.
I was actually recruited by Yale.
You were.
Yeah, but I don't think the grades were going to get me in.
Okay.
Most of the time when we're talking to a Bulldog on the air, it's a guy that went to Georgia or Fresno State.
Yeah, no, this is a real treat, and congratulations for you to actually do both and to finish it up. I know, like, I went 2 years at North Dakota and came here, and I actually went back 5 years of summer school, switched to DePaul, took night school here to try and get my degree, and ended up getting traded before I could finish it up. But I wanted to do it. So congratulations to you.
Thank you
to
very
have
much.
The wherewithal to go through that process. And I think it's something that, you know, you and your family obviously are very proud about. Good for you.
Number one goal going into the season outside of being on the ice. No pressure.
Winning it all.
All right.
It's a good goal.
You look at, the excitement, and, you probably had the opportunity to meet Brandon Saad for the first time, Patrick Sharp, two great players that have been here in Chicago. You bring these guys back, and I know that's disappointing. You lose a couple of the teammates, Panarin, Nicholas Jalmerson, Marcus Kruger gone as well, Scott Darling. But are you feeling, when you come to this convention and the fans are back, and are you feeling the excitement building up for the season?
Definitely. I think all the guys are itching to get back on the ice together. And time's been flying by since the Nashville series. I know we're going to be at training camp in no time. So everyone's excited, and it's pretty clear that all the guys we brought in are going to add a ton to this team, and there's already that chemistry.
So, John, you probably grew up watching every playoff game ever. Once you guys were eliminated by Nashville, were you able to watch them in the playoffs, or did you just get away from it?
I took some time and got away from it. Naturally, but at Yale too, I had to finish up exams and some papers. But after that, I did watch. I think for me, I've always used other games as a learning tool, kind of ISO cam on guys that I think I could learn from or emulate. So I think it's just motivating, if anything, to watch because you want to be there the next year.
You had the exit meeting at the end of the season, and every player and all the teams do it. You go in and you probably met with. Whether it was Coach Q or Stan or not, what was the message being sent by them going into the off season? What kind of was their take on their thoughts on your time here and where you needed to go for the following season?
Yeah, I think I showed some flashes of potential in the games that I was in, and I think it's really
a lot of potential.
Thank you, but it's really my job to take that and develop it into an established role. So I think just taking this what I did successfully and continue to do that, and then the areas of the game that didn't come as naturally, just keep working on them. Obviously, it's such a fast game, and you're playing with such skilled players. So just keep it on, working on the skill and the speed. And I think, like I said before, if I can do that as a bigger guy, it'll just help me a ton.
Are you on the ice yet? Have you started to skate?
I actually started a few weeks ago, but in August we'll get on a lot more.
Yeah, because a lot of the players, right around this time, is really when they kind of start getting onto the ice and getting into the skating part of it. Otherwise, it's a lot of the building up and the working out and quickness, plyometrics, or whatever those kind of things. So it's good that you're back on the ice now.
Yeah.
When are you gonna come back into Chicago to finish up? Right before the season starts, right before camp.
Yeah, I think early September.
You do yoga?
I do.
See? That's what I'm talking about, Harry. It's a thing. Everybody's got to do yoga. You guys do all this stuff, right? I mean, Pilates, yoga, all the core strength. You won't survive in the league with who you're competing against if you don't do it. It's not just skating, correct?
Yeah, yoga's great. You got to stay flexible, and it's really important to have that consistent injury prevention programming. But it's also great mentally just to relax and get away for a little bit, that meditation component.
You're going to laugh, and this is a true story.
Please tell me you do it.
Huh?
Are you going to say that you're in there too?
I can't pronounce the names, so I won't do it. We had Orville Tessier here, and there was a couple guys. It was Al Secord worked out harder than, you know, the kind of the normal guy did back in those days, and Keith Brown. And two guys, they kept getting hurt. They kept getting pulled muscles and stuff like that, and they were the two guys that worked out. We had a little bit of a workout room in the old Chicago Stadium that had a windmill bike, and if you wanted to go in there, it was like, you know, it was like the hands were going, and just a little kind of a setup there. We had plastic dumbbells on the side of it. We had to do the screws and stuff. So Orville Tessier comes in when the two of our strong guys got hurt. They put a lock on the door, and he says, nobody's allowed to work out anymore. You guys are getting too strong. You're getting too tight.
What?
That was the mentality. And this is a true story. They would not allow us to go into the workout room. So we were banned from the workout room. That was the mentality in the early 80s that completely changes now. I mean, I see these guys, and you're seeing the box jumps. You do the box jumps, and
right.
Yep. I pull a muscle just looking at
them. And you guys, before a game, what did you have, steak and potatoes, the whole deal?
Yeah, we had and
smoke a cigarette, have a steak, and right? I mean, it was
this is something, you know, obviously this is before you were born probably, but, you know, we used to fly commercial on smoking flights. And the rookies got middle seats, and you know, we had to find our own, some of the cities, we had to go get our own pregame meals, the restaurants and stuff, because it was too expensive to get it in a hotel. You had one option, and at the beginning of the season, they took a list down. They said, do you want chicken, fish, or steak? And they'd say, how do you want your steak? And they'd say, well, medium rare. They would walk in and say, who's got a medium rare steak? And they had a couple baked potatoes, some beans or something like that, and ice cream. And that was our pregame meal.
John's looking at you like you have seven eyes right now.
little different now. Do you think they overanalyze the game? I know that they have mental skills coaches. They have nutritionists, which is all in the betterment for the game. But does it get a little overwhelming?
No, I think it's all great. The way science works and, you know, all the new developments and the technology we have. I think it's important to have everything in front of you and try everything out. And, you know, different things work for different guys. I know at Yale we have a lot of options for, you know, the mental side with coaches, and you know, it's mandatory to at least try everything, and after the first session you can do whatever you want. So I think I've been able to watch guys on Chicago and what I've learned at Yale and at the USA program in Ann Arbor, just take different things and see what works for me. And I think the diet is huge. What you put in your body is, and the sleep you get helps a ton. So I love learning and reading about the new developments.
What are the mandatory things you have to try?
It's just meeting with a few and mental coaches, the sports psychologists.
It's great that support's there.
We had mental coaches. I played for a few of them.
John Hayden, congrats on your success. Congrats on graduating from Yale.
Thank you.
Being a part of the Hawks. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up after 6, we'll have Richard Panik, Thomas Yurko on 720 WGN.
Richard Panik's got in over the Predator line in front of the net, turns and fires, he scores! Outstanding play by Richard Panik, shielded off the defenseman the whole way.
Hedman spins the puck around, nod out, Schmaltz from the right point, fires, blocked in front, rebound, score! Tomas Yurko's first goal as a Chicago Blackhawk. It's his first point of the season, and it makes it 3-1 Hawks.
Like I said, this is I would say, first start for me, and I'm very excited for it.
Vezinets headed for the bench. He's back in the Predator net. Kane into the Predators on left circle. Panik and Freddie Schinger scores! Hat trick for Richard Panik, the first of his career.
This year he's gone to the next level of being way more predictable and really elevated our team game with his consistency added to that line.
Yeah, baby. Broadcasting live from the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago, brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland. Troy Murray's here, Harry Tynowitz is here, I'm Mark Carmen, Richard Panik, Thomas Yurko joining us now. What a season for you, Richard Panik. 22 goals to 22 assists. I mean, just the breakout campaign that a lot of people had predicted for you, and you had it last year. I know the season didn't end the way you guys wanted it, but you got to feel good about how you perform on the ice.
Yeah, like you said, the season didn't end up well for the team, but for me, I think it was a good season. You know, finally I stepped up and I find a spot in the lineup and stay there for a long time, 82 games. So I was really excited, and hopefully I will do even better the next season.
What was the difference of this year compared to the other seasons where you had that consistency? And I know there's a lot of you and I were talking during the season. Just knowing that you kind of earned your spot and not worrying about whether you're in or out of the lineup had a big thing to do with it.
Yeah, I think last year was the first time nothing changed, because when I was in Tampa, the whole organization changed. Even in Toronto, they picked me up from waivers. So the old organization, they rebuilt everything. You know, head coach new came and everything. And here in Chicago, I got here in January. I played a half a season, and then in a training camp, I knew like what should I expect, you know. And I had a really good summer, and my main focus was on the training camp. I just want to like earn that spot and go from the first game to the season and to the rest.
So if you look at it, you know, Thomas, now the same kind of situation as you come to from Detroit last year in the trade. And now you've got, you know, your feet wet here in Chicago with the team. You come into training camp. You know, does that make you feel a little bit more comfortable, you know, knowing what the expectations are, what the coaching staff expects from you as a player as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those few months last season helped me a lot. You know, it makes it easier for me to come in September and know all the guys, know coaches, they know me, and know the city, everything around. So for sure that helps, and I'm happy that I could be here last year, so it makes it easier for this year.
So, Richard, you're like an example. You're an example for everybody in the league, because when you were with, you know, last year Toronto made the playoffs, of course, but before that, when you left there, they weren't one of the best teams, and you come to one of the best teams, and you're able to blossom and get better and better. So, I mean, guys around the league are saying, I want to put the work in like Richard Panik. That's got to make you feel good.
Yeah, it feels good, you know. But I think everyone is different, you know. It has different story, and mine was, it worked out. And I think, yeah, like, it's a good thing, you know. Finally, as soon as I found out I got traded to Chicago, I was kind of like skeptic, you know. I was like, oh, that's one of the best team in the league, and I'm not sure if I'm gonna make a roster even for until the rest of the season. And then they brought me to the first team, and they kept me there, and it was good.
Thomas, how do you feel about everyone saying that you're the next Richard Panik? That's like all over the place. I'm sure you've heard it. Yeah,
it'd be nice for sure, you know, to have a season like him. And I mean, I know him from when we were younger, so we always knew he had a big potential, and he was a good player. So it was like he said, I think he found the right spot, and a lot of things work out for him here in Chicago. So I like the city, I like the team, and I hope it's going to work out for me the same way.
So you're both from Slovakia. Do you guys go out and, I don't know, get a little goulash, something like that going on? That's got to be a thing, right? I mean, you got to have some home cooking, right?
Yeah, well, we live far from each other, like three hours away, so
okay,
there's not much hanging out. But we used to be in the same national team, so we know each other for a long time, and no goulash with
a spot in Chicago that you would recommend? Is there, like, what's the best Slovakian restaurant? If Carm wanted to take out his new girlfriend tonight for, like, great Slovakian bill of fare, where would he go?
There's one Czech restaurant.
There's a bunch of, yeah.
There's a few Czech restaurants.
Few
I don't think
the
there's a Slovakian restaurant, but there is Czech, and it's very similar food.
Yeah.
So
Bohemian restaurant, but I don't know the name.
Yeah, Bahamian House is one of them. Listen, I've been doing the research all day, seeing where you guys eat, and the goulash was a thing.
I've been at the Cafe Prague.
Yeah,
Cafe Prague, yeah, that's the one.
And then what's the dessert that you – the Kalaki, how do you say it, K-O-L? Is that that's a little dessert, a little pastry thing? No? No?
No idea.
Anybody? No? Kalachki.
Kalachki.
Yeah.
Well, that's not
– I say I was right there, Kalaki, Kalachki.
Kalachki?
Troy,
Kalachki.
Step in.
That's just dessert, translated.
Yeah, dessert, cakes,
it's collage.
Okay.
But it's not like
specific kind of just award.
Yeah, see, that doesn't tell you that.
It was a rough moment for me at the 10th annual Black Ops Convention.
You hung in there.
So you guys are at the convention, which is great, and obviously it is. But, you know, a lot of travel. You came in Friday, and you're leaving tomorrow. That's a lot of travel. You said it was a 10-hour trip. You came in on Wednesday, and you're leaving tomorrow. You guys, I think, are on the same flight tomorrow. How does that work here as far as you're trying to catch up jet lag and all the events and stuff that are going on here at the convention?
I think it's like we don't do anything hard, you know, here. You know, you don't practice on, so it's kind of like you can battle through it. So I was a little bit tired yesterday, but I feel good today, and I don't know, like it's a good experience, you know. I haven't been here last year, so it's really good for the fans, for the Chicago, and it's just good experience.
Thomas, you've never experienced anything like this either, have you?
No, we didn't have
this thing before, anything like
in
that.
In Detroit, but I like it. It's a good way to, you know, to connect with the fans and just be here and see all the guys in the summer. It's kind of a new thing for me, and I like it. I think it's better going this way from Europe here, but it's gonna be harder when we
on
get
the way
home.
Back, yeah.
The time change is harder when we get back to get used to.
We'll just get to bed early tonight.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen on a Saturday night, last night in Chicago. So, Thomas, you have to know that Blackhawk fans hate the Red Wings. So now that you've got that Red Wing stench off of you, are you able to compare the two fan bases? Because, I mean, you know, Chicago's this awesome city, but Red Wings have great fans. Just it's a team that we never really liked. But what is it like going? You both went from original six teams to come to the Blackhawks. What are your thoughts on playing for the Blackhawks?
I like it. I mean, like you said, both teams were in original six. And when I was playing for Detroit, I noticed that anywhere we played, I felt like we played home. We played in Arizona, and there was more Detroit fans than
Coyotes.
Their fans, but. I came here, and this is even I would say the city is bigger, and of course there's more people here. So I thought nothing's gonna beat the Detroit fan base, but being here for a couple months, I saw that there was the same, maybe even more people showing up at the other arenas, you know, and supporting us when we play away. So it's very cool.
You get 10,000 people here for the weekend, and I was talking to, you know, Sharpie and stuff. You can feel the excitement. The fans are ready for the hockey season to start, and I know it's a couple months away yet, but did you kind of get, when you come into this situation, your blood flowing and ready to start the season?
I think the thing is that they miss hockey because we ended up so unexpectedly, you know, quick. Mm-hmm. So it's been a few months, and fans in Chicago are not used to this, being without hockey for so long. So I think we gotta.
Which
bring
is a
it
nice
back.
Thing that to have. It doesn't happen very often, but.
Did you have to bond with Taze off the ice, or Richard, to sort of get the chemistry on the ice, or did that just kind of come natural just playing?
I don't know. We were sitting next to each other in the dressing room. So even like when I got here, I wasn't playing with him. But Taser always talked to me, you know, and he seems so open from the day one. And I don't know, when we started playing together at the beginning of the season, it wasn't great, you know. We have to figure out things on the ice, and I think we finally got it like in the middle of season, and finally everything clicked, and. We know, like, now, like, where should be on the ice. And then Schmaltz came to our line, and I think it clicked even better. So it took some time, but I think we figured it out, yeah.
Going into next year after the career year that you had this year, what are your goals? Where's the high point of what you want to achieve here?
I just don't want to look on that on the points, you know, because if I'm gonna start focusing on points, like, okay, I'm gonna set some bar, you know, I have to have this much points, like it's not gonna work, you know. Just have to make it simple, you know. Just go from what got me here, you know, how I earned a spot on the team, and just do the small things for the team, and eventually the points and everything will come, you know. So just just do those small details and everything's going to be fine.
Because Thomas, Coach Q is a stickler on the details, especially in your own end of the ice. So that's where kind of he holds everybody accountable. If you can play well there, you're going to get along pretty good with Coach Q. You know, kind of going along the same lines, expectations coming into this season, knowing the coaching staff and what's expected of you.
Like I said, it helped me a lot to be here for those couple of months. And I think every coach likes guys that are responsible and being, good in D zone. So it is a little different. Some stuff is a little different than we had in Detroit, where we played a little more defensive as we play here in Chicago. We try to create more and be more offensive. But like I said, every coach likes players that I can't say don't make mistakes, because everybody does. But they're responsible in the D zone, and I guess I have to do it if I want to get a good spot in the lineup.
Hey guys, one of the great goal scorers in the league, a certain Hall of Famer, Marian Hossa, is not going to be with you guys this year. How does that affect you individually, Richard?
I think Marian, he helped me a lot when I got to Chicago. He talked to me all the time about a coach, what should I do to impress him, and stuff like that. So he helped me a lot. Anyone like me, I was grateful just to be on a team with him, and watch him, how he prepares for a game and what he does on the ice. And but now, he's not going to be with us. But, that's a big minus. But we got other guys, and other great leaders. And I think it's going to be good, but everybody's going to miss him.
So you're going back to Slovakia when?
Sunday.
See, Terry, Troy, and I were thinking about taking a trip, and I'm looking up here the top 10 things to do in Slovakia. It says here to hike from Strabisky Pleso to the Skok Waterfalls in High
Tatras.
Is that a thing?
We have great mountains, and
everything
really
on
nice.
Here says hike. There's like
yep.
Sounds like a football game.
Did you do any Chara does some weird things in the off season stuff? Do you do some of the kind of things that he does, hiking the Himalayas or whatever he was?
Yeah, me and my buddies, we just started during the weekends, just go on a hike because there is so many mountains around my town. So we start doing that and just to go to the nature and see, get the fresh air. And but the other thing I start doing is trap shooting. So I really liked it and that's what I started, and it's pretty fun.
You sleeping out in a tent? Oh, is that going on?
What's that?
You sleeping in a tent, or are we going hotel here?
No. Not a tent.
Not back to nature.
They're staying on the roof.
Not there, no.
Yeah, they're Slovakians, so they're sleeping on the roof because it's like a mountain.
Once you get into nature, sometimes you don't want to come out, and maybe you're bringing a tent along with you, Harry.
Yeah, I stayed one time in a tent, and I said never again because it was raining and it was so cold. So I was like, okay, I prefer a hotel room.
See? He did it once.
What's the word for championship? How do you guys say championship back home?
Championship?
When you get all excited, we go nuts. We say we want the cup, or something like that. Is there like some Slovakian way to announce that you're, here to win the Stanley Cup again this year?
Okay, I don't know. You tell the Yorks. I don't know.
I don't understand the question.
What's a question? That's what I was trying to figure out. Like,
it must have been a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a home run, Harry. Great job.
It was either that or ask Thomas how a Red Wings fan could sit with an octopus in his pants for 2.5 hours and then take it out in the third period.
We were talking to, it was John Hayden, and whether he watched the playoffs after that. What do you guys do? Do you guys watch the playoffs after you're out? Do you follow it?
If you watched it?
Yeah. Or do you kind of just get away from them?
I watched it. I didn't play, so I was watching a lot.
After the Blackhawks were out.
Not this year, Tom.
Oh, after they're out, okay. After we got out, I didn't really watch it. For the last few years, I maybe watched one or two games.
It used to drive me crazy when you know, our team was out, and I would always go on a vacation right after, and just so I wouldn't, you know, sit at home and
have
the TV and start watching the games, because I just hated not being playing.
Yeah, even for me, like, usually after a season, I go right back home, and there's a time difference, you know, 6 hours, so the games are at 2 a.m.
You're coming home late.
Yeah, and I'm not going to wake up in the morning and watch the hockey. You know, so I just want to take a rest from the hockey and focus on myself, my free time.
I'm looking at these thermal spas and ski resorts here. Looks like an amazing time. You guys have a beautiful country from afar. I'd love to visit sometime. Thanks for coming today. Congrats on all your success to this point, and best of luck this year on the deep run.
Safe travels home tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Thomas Yurko, Richard Panik on 720 WGN.
This is my kingdom come. This is now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
Great to be out here at the 10th annual Blackhawks Convention. We are broadcasting live from the Hilton Chicago, and we are brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland. Had been having a great, great time this afternoon. Always great to see a ton of Blackhawks, current and former, and we bring in one of the great formers, the Hall of Famer, your favorite Blackhawk goalie of all time, or at least mine, Tony Esposito, jumping on with Troy Murray and Harry Tynowitz. And Itonio is here looking dapper and ready as always.
Did you see his shoes? Look at those shoes.
He's a fashion statement.
There's no doubt.
Yeah, sure, Troy.
You look great. You always do.
Mark, check out it's got to be the shoes. Look at those. Those are like blue. What are those? Like blue alligators?
It's like a snake skin situation going on there.
I don't know. They're infatuated. They got a shoe fetish. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you got to see how we roll here, Tony. We're trying to get to the next level, and you're kind of modeling it for us right now.
Like Rex Ryan. Remember Rex Ryan, the football coach? He had a little foot fetish thing, but this is just shoe.
That's uncomfortable.
But by the way, I asked Richard Panik and Thomas Yurko the Slovakian word for championship. It's Majstra Vosta.
Good job, okay? Harry. Way to tie that together in a perfect bow for us.
He feels better. He feels better.
I feel a lot better.
He does. So, Tony, this is the 10th Blackhawks convention. I mean, does it seem like yesterday that just started out here? I mean, I feel like it's gone by pretty quick, and you've, of course, been a staple every year.
Well, it's I'll tell you this. I find it a fun weekend. I get to see a lot of old colleagues. A lot of them are limping a little more than they used to. But outside of that, I see ex-players like Troy and that. And we have a good time, and we talk, and have a couple of drinks, maybe. Diet Coke.
There you go.
We were talking to these younger players about, you know, their off-season training and stuff like that. You know, we all kind of did our own thing back in the day. But the game's changed. Not the game itself, which obviously there's a huge change in that. But we were talking about our pregame meals and what we did the night before. A little bit different mentality in today's sports world, isn't it?
Well, actually,
is it better
yes.
or worse? I don't know. I think we had more fun.
Well, we probably had a lot more fun because, you know, we were tighter. In other words, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but we were mostly 99% Canadians, and we all had the same idea, you know, to grow up as hockey players and win the Stanley Cup and be the best you can. We know with the different cultures involved, everybody looks at it a different way. So
there was never a language barrier, back in our day, and that is an issue in some situations.
Well,
now,
they just have a situation where, you know, when your culture is different than we're used to.
Yeah.
Everybody's brought up differently. I'm sure everybody wants to win, and that's for sure, but it just seems like we all grew up the same way, that type of stuff. but it was fun. And but training, you know, you mentioned training. I trained all summer.
Did you really?
Oh yeah.
And like so now, now
I worked out all summer.
Well, what did you do? Were you running? Were you skating? How were you working out?
I ran. I did weights. I played racquetball 4 or 5 days a week. Singles, and I liked when I was getting longer and older. I was 35 or 40, and I was beating some of our players that were 23 and 24. That was really fun because, you know, it's nice to see an older guy show up to young guys. Huh?
But and going back to, like, training, but training camp was different. Training camp was for most players to get into shape.
Well, I didn't look at it like that.
No, but most players did. I mean, a lot of players didn't train in the summer.
You got to training camp on Monday. You played on Thursday. So you got 2 or 3 days to get ready. I don't know if you can. And I just found that not practicing so much, but the games in training camp were very important to me because that would gauge how I'm going to play the rest of the year. So if I wasn't ready, then I knew I had to pick it up, as you know what I mean, Troy.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories that you've told, Tony, you always, correct me if I'm wrong, when you guys would fly, your seat was at the back of the plane, and nobody messed with that, correct?
Back left.
We used to have little hideouts so we can – well, we used to, you know, there was no drinking on the planes. And
could smoke, but you couldn't drink.
Yeah. So we used to smuggle in, you know, after the game, a six-pack or two. I'd always have a six-pack in my suitcase after the game. I'd keep it on ice, with the hidden there and loaded in with a plastic container. Because on the planes, we never had access to alcohol like they do today. You know, the teams put alcohol on the planes. And so we used to sneak it on, so you had to get it far from the coach. So the coach would sit up in the front seat. He knew what was going on. Everybody had to have 2 or 3 beers after the game. And some guys smoked, as you know. And the coach, when he wanted to, he'd get up and before he starts to walk toward the back, he would get up and let on he's doing something so that you can hide your beer, you know what I'm saying? Because he doesn't want to catch you anyway. Because it wasn't outrageous, but we did have a little bit of fun.
We were talking earlier. Do you remember when Orville kicked us out of the weight room? Do you remember that? Like Al Secord and Keith Brown both got hurt with Orville, and Orville said, "That's it. You guys are all getting too tight, too much muscles, and all this kind of stuff." We were not allowed to go.
That was
into the weight room.
But see, that's a fallacy. Weight training is part of it, and you got to be.
But that was a little bit of the old school mentality.
Yeah,
and
that
he
was
had
the
that
mentality.
Old school.
They all had that. You couldn't weightlift because it would make you too tight, and your reflexes wouldn't be there, and you pull muscles easier. But that wasn't a fact. You know, that it was just that old school thought. Now, don't forget, many years ago, training camp was like 3 weeks long.
Yeah.
So that's when the players got in. But I'm talking the 50s and that. So it was different when we came in because they shortened the training camp. And like I said, you come into training camp on Monday, you're playing Thursday. So if you're not in decent shape, you could get hurt.
Tony, you know, Scott Darling made the most of his opportunity here, and he deserves every penny he's going to get from the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yes.
Corey Crawford has been, you know, fantastic. I know Pecorine got the best of him and the Blackhawks team in the playoffs, but your thoughts on Corey Crawford as we head into the 17-18 season?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know his backup. I have no idea who he is.
It looks like it's going to be the kid that they picked up in the trade from Columbus, Anton Forsberg.
I don't know him.
He really hasn't played many games in the NHL, but that's kind of the guy that they're penciling.
Yeah, but you're pretty confident in Crawford, aren't you?
Yes, but it's a two-man job now because of the length of the playoffs. So what happened was, like, Pittsburgh won, but they got to the finals with Fleury.
Right, Fleury beat the Capitals.
He played tremendous. So he was burning out. So they had the other guy, fresh guy, Murray, who was their number one, and he stepped in and he had a tremendous final.
Well, the Boston Bruins, this is a true story. It happened this year. In the middle of March or wherever it was, the Blackhawks played the Boston Bruins. And they've got Tuukka Rask as their number one goaltender, right?
Mm-hmm.
Scott Darling, I think, at that point had 18 wins. Boston's backup goaltenders combined had one win all season long. Yes. I mean, that's how much a backup goaltender means to the teams now, because you played most of the games back in your day without a whole lot of backup.
Well, I like to play every day. You know, that was me. I like to play 70-some games a year. I just, I found that you were flowing after, and it became second nature. Whereas today, it's like you say, you got the playoffs are like a mini season, and very, very crucial, because you're getting in the playoffs and you got 20-some games. Is that how long it can go?
You got seven rounds or four rounds at seven games.
Yeah, so it's going to go 21, 22 games at least. So, I mean, that's a lot of stress on
the goalie. And every other day, basically, during
the series. Yeah, a lot of stress. And not only physically, but mentally, the stress is there. You need two goalies, and I thought we had two number one goalies, to tell you the truth. I thought Crawford did a great job for us, but I thought that Scott Darling had a better year than he did.
He played well, Scott Darling, obviously, he's going down to Carolina.
Yes.
He's going to be the number one
guy.
He's
got a rude awakening there.
but he's also, Tony, he's the number one guy.
Yes.
And everybody talks about being the backup, you know that you're the backup. Like Scott Darling, and I'm not being critical against him or not, but his biggest challenge is now the pressure is going to be on him to be the number one guy in Carolina. Is that a true mentality that he has to change, that now that he's the number one guy?
Well, he's going to have a problem because you're dealing with a mediocre hockey team. And they spend a lot of time in their own zone, as you know. And they're 500 maybe. And there's a lot more, it's a lot tougher to play on a team that's 500 than a team that's, say, 700 or whatever we were. Because of the fact is, you spend more time in your own zone, you don't score as many goals, and you have more goals scored against you. So the odds are the goalie isn't going to have the record he had last year. I don't think with a team like that you can.
You Tony, when I first came in the NHL, I didn't know a whole lot about the NHL, but you were one of the guys that when you were playing, your preparation was second to none. I mean, you were focused. You had your pad sitting down in front of you. You spent a lot of time kind of focusing, going over there. Is the mental side of it one of the most important things for a goaltender? Because he's the last line of defense. I mean,
I agree that way, because if a goaltender is not ready to play mentally, then you find yourself down a goal or two right away. If he's not ready to play, you're going to be in a hole. It's like a baseball pitcher, same as a goalie. If the pitcher isn't ready mentally to play, he's got a problem, because everybody's got the physical talent. That's for sure. And also, is if I was in the game and I knew I was ready to play, and I stunk the joint out, which happens, then you can't say, well, I wasn't ready. You were ready, but you just didn't have it. So you can live with that. And, you hate to let the guys down. That was my biggest thing, is I didn't want to let you guys up front, get down in the dumps. I wanted to keep you in the game, and then we pick it up.
Hall of Famer Tony Esposito, how many goals would you allow nowadays if you could wear the equipment that they all wear?
You don't know. I mean, it's speculation, but I think it's a big plus. But it's a good plus because everybody gets the same equipment.
Is the equipment too big, Tony?
Well, it's
light. I mean, are
the
pads that are this high, I mean, well, are the they pads, too big?
The pads are getting to extreme now. As you see, they're right up to their waist. And the catching glove is just gigantic. But everybody's got the same parameters. So is it an advantage to anybody else?
No, but
everybody's got the
but
same.
They're looking to increase scoring.
Yes, and we need to increase scoring.
You know, I mean, for the excitement of the game, everybody likes to see the offense. Everybody likes to see goals scored. For a goaltender, the equipment was for protection.
Yes.
Right? And now it's to keep the puck out of the net.
You said it.
Am I right on that?
You've seen how wide the hockey pants are?
That's got nothing to do with to protect the goaltender. It's to keep the puck out of the net. So
cover as much net as possible.
It got away from the original philosophy of the goaltending equipment itself.
Yes, it has. And as a result, the goal scoring's down because a lot of times it hits you. You don't know it hits you. You know what I'm saying? It just, bang, hits you because you got the big arm pads and the big shoulder pads and the pads are just gigantic. But, again...
There were some rumors, though, that you kind of messed around with the equipment.
Sure, yeah, cheated. You always cheat a little bit.
I don't even know if I should
do it. Not that bad. I mean, you...
No one's listening. It's okay. You can go.
You try to make things a little advantageous to you. Make the pads a little fatter.
Okay, so you brought it up. At the beginning of the playoffs, they would have one guy come in, and they would tell you that we're coming in to measure your pads before the playoff series starts, right?
Yeah.
They did it one time a year, before the playoffs. Tony used to do his own stitching, and he did his own pads, very meticulous about kind of the way that he did it. He would take his sewing kit out, undo all the stitching, take out some of the padding, stitch them back up. The guy would come in with a tape measure, and he'd measure the pads. Oh, these are perfect. The guy walks out the door, he'd take the stitching back out, put the padding back in.
Well, you got to use it every advantage you can. You know, that's part of the business. But overall, I mean, everybody, some goalies had a little fatter goal stick and everything. There's ways, or sometimes they would use it, the stick was too long or the blade was too long. They, you know, everybody tries to get an advantage.
You
but it
cheating,
all evens.
You ain't cheating, you ain't winning, right? Well, is that
you gotta,
how it works?
Gotta help.
You ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
You keep trying to do little things like that. But now it's so standard, I don't think they have to cheat about anything. I mean, you can't get it any bigger.
Would you, like, now they're talking about, you know, shrinking the pants again now because they're getting too big. If they came up to you, the NHL, and said, Tony, what can we do to increase scoring as far as goaltending equipment, what would your recommendation be?
Well, my opinion, maybe you should go to the minor league, the AHL, and try it out. And I think you should cut down the catching glove a little bit because it's become a bushel. And it never closes, you know that. It just stays open. And if reduce the pads slightly. But there was another idea, and first my brother and I talked about it. He floated it. We were talking about maybe instead of the goalposts being about, 3 inches across or something, cut them down an inch.
Mm.
So the net, the outside of the dimensions on the net wouldn't change.
Still be a 6x4, but you're getting a couple inches all over.
You get an inch or two, an inch or a half inch on each side and an inch on the top or a half inch. So it makes it a little bit bigger. I think that's a viable thing without changing
the size
of the net. Because if you start changing that, you know how everybody is.
That means Seabrook's goal's good and the Blackhawks beat the Blues.
You know what I mean.
I know.
Everybody, it's tough to get something like that through.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to make the net 2 inches bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
They wanted to bow the sidebars out.
Yeah.
Tony Esposito, you're the Hall of Famer. We appreciate you jumping on, as per always. And it's always beautiful to look up to the Raptors and see 35 up there.
I love this guy.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm going to go out for a nice bowl of pasta tonight.
Yeah, baby.
At Rosebuds.
Yeah, all right.
And they'll be chanting, Tony, Tony.
Thank you.
Quick timeout, 720 WGN.